720 WGN, a very good Saturday evening to you. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, and we got a crowded show here for you today. And we're going to be talking with all things, in fact, just after this first break, I'm going to introduce you to a really fascinating guest. She is a workers' rights attorney by day, and she has such an interesting job by night. It's really skillful and it's unusual, and I find it so fascinating that this woman is an expert at both the law and this other thing. That's a little bit of a tease to what it is. A little bit later on, Audrey Anderson's going to join us to talk all things Kyle Rittenhouse and about the defense. You know, there's so many questions about what the judge is doing in this case, and we're going to kind of break down what actually happens in a courtroom. I think that we're all very hyper aware of what's happening in the Kyle Rittenhouse case because a lot of people are watching it really with a hard eye at it. But are these normal things that happen in the courtroom, or is this one a little bit different? We'll get Audrey's interpretation a little bit later on. And then Henry Cass is going to join us from MKFM Law to talk about post-decree, things that happen after a divorce and a ruling's already been made, and things that parents are certainly going to want to know. And he'll be taking some of your calls, too. But 312-91-7200 is the phone number, and the question of the day: by age 23, 30.2% of Americans have what? And we'll go to the phone lines with Randy and Dixon. Randy, how you doing on this Saturday evening?
Not too bad at all.
Listening from Dixon. Things going well in Dixon?
Well, I'm out doing field work on the farm, but yeah, it's going pretty well.
You're out there right now this late at night?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it feels late at night because of how dark it is. All right, Randy, what's your guess then? I won't keep up more of your time.
I'm thinking that it's outstanding credit card or delinquent credit card debt.
That's a great guess. That is not the answer. I wouldn't be surprised if, actually, it's probably a little bit more than 30% for credit card debt or delinquent debt. I don't know for sure, but Randy, that's a great guess. That's not our answer. Have a great rest of your evening, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, good for night. Sure. Thanks for listening. Let's go to Mike in Arlington Heights. Mike, what's your guess?
My guess was a college education.
That's also a great guess, right? Because 23 would be about the time a bachelor's would be finished. I know college education numbers keep on creeping up, and that 30% sounds about right. That is not our answer. I'm sorry, Mike. Thanks for calling, though, boss.
All right.
Thanks. Have a good one. Let's go to Jeremy.
Right.
Yep, very good. Let's go to Jeremy. I'm trying to get on the line. His line is not working for me. It's not quite working for me. 312-981-7200. Jeremy, you there? I can't get Jeremy quite on the line. Okay, 312-91-7200 if you're able to do that. I think Jeremy's on line one. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Good. Right?
Jeremy, you there?
Hello?
Hello? This is WGN. Hello? What's your name?
Oh, my name's Karen.
Oh, Karen, all right, what's your guess?
An arrest record.
Karen, you got it. That is the right answer. It's a criminal. Oh, it's a criminal record. 30.2% of Americans have a criminal record. How'd you guess that?
Well, it's a legal show.
Yes,
my son's an attorney, so I was trying to think. I'm like, it can't be a car. It can't be something that obvious.
Right.
So.
Well, it's taken 3 weeks, Karen, but you got the answer. So
well, you
stay on the line because you won a $50 gift card to the 50-50 restaurant group to be used at any one of their 14 fantastic establishments all over the Chicago area. Roots Pizza, Westtown Bakery, they got a lot of great things. And 50 bucks will go a long way, Karen.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, so don't hang up. Jack's going to help you during the commercial break. And then we're going to also meet the woman who is a lawyer by day and has a really interesting job by night after this on WGN. Welcome back to Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hope you've had a great Saturday. Definitely cooler than we've had the last couple of weekends, to be sure. And more snow on the way. We'll, of course, keep you posted right here on WGN. John Hansen here, taking you till 8 o'clock. And This next guest is, you know, normally we have, and she is a lawyer, but normally we have folks on to talk about legal cases, wrinkles in the law, stuff like that. But I'm just so fascinated by our next guest. Her name is Naomi Frisch. She's a Chicago native. And I mentioned she's a lawyer, but she's also the principal oboist for the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra and the Elmhurst Symphony Orchestra. She's an avid chamber musician. She does a lot of incredible things in the music world, but she's also a worker rights attorney at Asher Gittler and D'Alba, and I'm just so fascinated by someone who is really, really good at two very, very different things. And Naomi, thanks for coming on the program with us here today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Your love of music, your love of playing the oboe, has that been around since you were a young kid?
Sure. I started playing the oboe kind of by accident in sixth grade. I changed schools, and my new school had a band program. My old school didn't. And the band director there was an oboist, but didn't have any oboes in his band and kind of bribed me to try oboe.
And that's how I got into percussion, by the way, too. I was like, I want to play trumpet. They're like, we need some percussionists. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it was, yeah, and I guess, you know, the rest is history, so.
What's it like? I mean, obviously, the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra is a big deal. What's it like to perform with them?
It's a fantastic orchestra. I've been lucky enough to have played with them since the year 2000. Some of the best freelancers in the city of Chicago are in that orchestra. They're just wonderful colleagues to work with and play with, and it's a joy. It's a pleasure.
So why, you know, you've got this great career, obviously, a musician. What inspired you to get your JD?
Well, from pretty much my very beginning of my professional musician career, I became very involved with the Musicians Union, the American Federation of Musicians. I was recruited very early on by my colleagues in the Illinois Philharmonic to be on what's called the Players Committee, which is sort of a group of musicians that are elected by our colleagues to represent our matters in, you know, negotiations with our employer. And at the time, the Illinois Philharmonic was not a union orchestra, but it is now, largely due to the efforts of myself and my colleagues back in the early 2000s in organizing the orchestra. So I was involved with that organizing campaign and with negotiating several of our successive collective bargaining agreements, and just kind of got really into the union organizing and union advocacy piece of being a professional musician. When I got in my mid-30s, I kind of looked at the lifestyle of a freelance musician and thought, I don't really want to do this for the next 30 years. What could I do instead? And one of my colleagues, Kevin Case, who's a fantastic attorney and also still a violinist, but former full-time professional violinist, encouraged me to take the LSAT and try out law school, and here I am.
I love that. Careers are like these long, winding paths, and I imagine a lot of our listeners are, you know, of an age where they're like, oh, I'm setting what I'm going to do. I guess there's never too late a chance to, whether it's law school or something else, to try something new and go for it.
Absolutely. Even if it's playing the oboe.
I don't know. That seems like something you want to be doing at a young age. But hey, try something new. You never know the way it goes. So how do these two careers sort of complement each other? Do they, or obviously they're very different in what they are. Or do you view them as just like different things that you have your left side of your brain and your right side of brain sort of thing?
Well, during law school, I continued performing and teaching a little bit, and it really sort of kept me, I think, grounded. And I mean, everybody who's been through law school, who's listening to this, knows that law school can be very draining emotionally and mentally. And I think the ability for me to, like, after a long day of sitting in the library and going to class, to go to a rehearsal with my colleagues and to sit down and to do something that I knew how to do was very affirming and sort of helped me, I think, get through law school with myself intact. And then I think once I started practicing, I cut down on my performing and teaching even more at that point, but still being able to have that sort of piece of myself in my life helped keep me balanced and, you know, not too stressed out and burned out even from the very beginning. So I sort of view it as my balance. But even more than that, I've been really grateful to have been able to do some work for the Chicago Federation of Musicians and to represent them in certain matters. And that's been a great sort of full circle moment for me. And I'm looking forward to a long relationship with them as well.
You're a workers' rights attorney, which makes sense kind of given your history and why you got into law in the first place. But, oh boy, what a busy time to be a workers' rights attorney.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So you're busy, what you're saying.
Yes, we all are.
Yes. I guess busy is a good thing, but you certainly put the, do you ever find that it's too much, or do you really like knowing that you have this other thing that to do? And it, like you said, it gives you that balance.
Yeah. There are definitely times when one facet of my life sort of encroaches on the other. For sure. I mean, we're here today because I've been featured recently with the Illinois Philharmonic. So last October, I played a pretty extensive concerto standing up in front of the orchestra, which took preparation that I have not undertook in many, many years, because I just didn't, you know, it wasn't necessary for me to take the time to prepare at that level in a long time. And so it was really sort of a challenge for me to, and I started a new firm in August as well. So sort of, you know, getting used to a new firm and still finding the time to practice an hour a day or more, you know, was kind of a challenge and something that I don't usually do, but was also a really interesting learning experience and taught me a lot about what I want out of my future career and my future lifestyle. So yeah, definitely times when one encroaches on the other, and, you know, I just do my best to make sure I manage my time as efficiently as possible and worry about those deadlines first. And that's what you got to do.
I imagine the oboe doesn't ever make its way out in court or anything like that.
Not too often, although a highlight of my early career was meeting Seventh Circuit Judge Diane Wood, who is also an oboe player.
Oh, that's cool. Believe it or not, Naomi is talking to us right before she actually has a show with the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra. They're getting ready to warm up for a concert tonight at 7:30. That's happening in Palos Heights. There's upcoming stuff as well for the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra. Some of it, of course, featuring Naomi and, of course, the entire orchestra as well. And for a full list of anything that, that the Illinois Philharmonic Orchestra is doing, you can go to ipomusic.org. There's a lot of holiday stuff coming up too. But Naomi, I know you got to go. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Can you believe that? A professional oboist as well as a lawyer. I'm always amazed at people that are able to not only master two careers, but kind of in their mid-30s or beyond, changing up their careers or trying something new. I know that a lot of us struggle with that sometimes, even when life throws you a curveball. Sometimes you just got to do it. But to have a passion for something at a younger age and working kind of through that, through the orchestra, and then deciding, hey, I'm going to take the LSAT, I'm going to jump off the cliff and try out law school when I do this is really cool stuff. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Got a couple minutes before the news. I want to tell you what's coming up here. We're going to chat with Audrey Anderson in just a moment after the news. She's a defense attorney now, but she spent time as DuPage County's in the state's attorney's office conducting a lot of different trials. So, you know, we're not going to talk specifically about everything that's happening in the Rittenhouse case, the kind of day-by-day stuff, but about some of the things that are happening in the courtroom itself. You know, we saw Kyle Rittenhouse testify. Is that very common for defendants? You know, there was a lot of questions. I heard John Williams talking back and forth. We talked about it on the Mincing Rascals about whether or not the quote-unquote tears that he had were real or not. Was it overly coached? Well, how much coaching goes in to helping out a defense? I'm kind of curious about those sorts of things. So we'll kind of peel back the layers a little bit, get Audrey's expertise on that, and dive into a little bit of what they do at their firm. A little bit later on, we'll talk to Henry Cass. He's a partner at MKFM Law, talking about all things. You know, look, divorces are often bumpy enough, but they can still continue to be bumpy, especially if you have kids, even after the decree, after the ruling in the divorce cases. So we're going to talk with Henry about common bumps and pitfalls and things you may want to know about. And you're going to be able to answer, ask questions that he'll hopefully be able to answer for you at 312-981-7200. And then I'll get you a new question of the week. We'll have the top three legal stories of the week as well. As well as, you know, we've done the game at the end of the show where we do, you know, name that movie or TV show where law is mentioned. Well, this week it's Name That Tune. We're going to play for you a little clip from a song that has something to do with law or mentions the word law or has some association with the legal world, and then you'll have to tell us who the artist is. So get ready for that. We'll do that in the 7 o'clock hour towards the end of the show. So a pretty packed one of that for sure. We'll talk to Audrey Anderson about all things Kyle Rittenhouse after the news here on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. 6:36 on this Saturday evening. It's cold, but it's crisp, and it's kind of got that fall feel here in Chicago. Thanks so much for joining us here. John Hansen taking you till 8 o'clock. Lot of the big stories legally this week have been centered around the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, which makes total sense. It's obviously been the big story for a while now. We're going to break down a little bit that and learn a little bit more here. Joining us in studio is Audrey Anderson, who is part of Anderson Attorneys and Advisors. Audrey, thanks for coming on the program tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, because you do a lot of defense work now, but you spend a lot of time in the DuPage attorney's office, which is more on the prosecutor side, right?
That's right. So I did start my career as a prosecutor at the DuPage County State Attorney's Office. And then after about 20 years, retired from there, left, and started a private practice.
And why switch to defense? Is that common amongst prosecutors who then maybe open up their own firm? They want to go on the defense side?
It is slightly common.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
I think maybe just for a change, a difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's exciting, challenge, something different. To defend people, and it gives us a very unique perspective when we're defending clients.
I was just going to say, because obviously as a prosecutor, you have a skill set, you know how to present that case, and having had that experience when you're approaching trial now as a defense attorney, I guess you kind of, I don't want to say tricks, because they're not tricks, but you kind of know what might be in the toolbox of a prosecutor. Is that a good way to put it?
That's an excellent way to phrase it, because definitely, I can see it from both perspectives, especially from being a prosecutor for that many years. I see the strengths that the prosecutor looks at, and then how they view it, and the strengths as a defense attorney, and how I view it from that way, from going against defense attorneys for all those years. So you're right, it gives me the dual perspective, which really is an advantage for my clients.
What sort of cases do you take on now? Well, I mean, what sort of defendants? All sorts of cases? I know you work with juveniles too.
Right. So we do adults and juveniles, and we do everything from traffic to felonies. So a lot of the time we handle bigger cases, especially drug cases or sex offenses, murders, just because the last decade plus of my life as a prosecutor, I was in the drug unit, supervisor of that, handling that in a lot of juvenile cases.
It is so important to have defense attorneys like you. And of course, we have so many public defenders as well that are doing the Lord's work in many ways. I just wish you could you speak just for a moment to the idea of why, you know, a lot of people give defense attorneys sometimes a hard time because sometimes they're defending quote unquote guilty people, but it's like a backbone of our country to have a right to that defense, right?
Absolutely. And that's very true, because people ask how you can defend someone that's clearly guilty. But that's the great thing about our legal system, is making sure that the prosecutors and police officers did everything right. And that's how the system works. It's the state's burden, and we have the right to proceed to a trial and make the state and the government prove it.
It's interesting, even watching the Kyle Rittenhouse trial, there's some certain things that might make me twinge a little bit, but I appreciate that the rules are there just in case I was ever in a situation like that, right? We all want those protections from certain overreaches of the government or whatever it may be, and have the burden on the state as opposed to the burden on the defendant. So, you know, just kind of broad strokes, because I know you're also busy. I'm sure you haven't watched every second of the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. But just overall, your thoughts on what we've been seeing and maybe some of the reaction that people have been having.
I think that it's probably very difficult for both the prosecutors and the defense attorneys to try a case that has so much media attention.
Yeah.
So much attention to detail and everything that they say in witnesses. But they obviously have so much experience putting on this case, all the witnesses, getting through all the evidence and exhibits. And, of course, being in front of that judge who is known for his unique antics mm-hmm. and comments in the courtroom. So that also puts a little added stress on the prosecutor and the defense attorneys.
So, okay, I want to ask that. As in a high-profile case, I'm sure you've worked some of yours as well, where there's reporters in the room, let alone being live-streamed, and a national case. Do you get nervous? I mean, be honest.
I think, yes, we do. But then you channel, and you're taught from when you first start as a prosecutor or defense attorney to channel that nervousness to excitement to proceed to your case.
Mm-hmm.
So you try to use that to make it better and to really just focus in on the specific details, the witnesses, the cross-examination, the evidence, and the preparation.
I think a lot of people, their experience of what a courtroom may be is what they see on Law and Order or another show. And I think sometimes when we see like a big case like the Kyle Rittenhouse case, it kind of changes our perspective. They're like, oh, that's right. I don't want to say it's more mundane because it's all important stuff, but it's not as high theatrics as what we see on TV.
That's very true. In real cases, for real life, there's a lot of minutiae and the minor details, foundational issues, kind of boring testimony when you're looking at from the outside that you don't see on a Law and Order.
Yeah. When I wanted to be a lawyer because I saw Billy Flynn in Chicago and thought it was all song and dance and performance, then I learned it wasn't, and that's why I do this on this side of the microphone instead of on the other side. You mentioned the judge, and he's admonished the prosecutor a couple times. He's had some interesting comments. Not to specifically talk about this judge, but I guess broadly speaking, do you get unique characters in judges? I mean, do they let their personal opinion, not necessarily about the case, but their personal personalities, is that common in a courtroom that, you know, it kind of comes out a little bit?
Sometimes that's very true. There are judges that have unique characteristics or tactics or responses that really do exist in real life in the counties around Northern Illinois. That's very true.
And that's just something you deal with and smile about. I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's all people. They're all human beings that are managing the courtroom, that are lawyers, that are defense attorneys, that are prosecutors. We all have our own unique personalities, and we're just kind of seeing it 24/7 on this trial right now.
Right. And so we have to just look back. When you're a prosecutor or a defense attorney going through it, it seems as if you're being scolded like a child. But then you really have to think of it from the judge's perspective. You have two opposite sides battling out for what they believe is correct, the guilt of the defendant or the innocence of your clients. And the judge is really a mediator. And with all the public scrutiny and everyone watching it and it being live streamed and then it can go up on appeal, the judges also have a lot of pressure that we just don't really think about as attorneys.
I was kind of surprised when Kyle Rittenhouse even took the stand. I mean, how unusual is that for a defendant to take the stand?
It's somewhat unusual, but in these types of situations where the argument and the claim is self-defense or defense of another, it's really important in a lot of cases to have a client testify, especially one who is so young. He was 17 at the time. He's now only 18. He has no background, no criminal history that can come back and haunt him as he testifies. It's very important for the jury as a defense attorney to see him as a young kid and what he was feeling at the moment, as opposed to doing cross-examination of witnesses or putting on witnesses to have them try to get the jury to feel what the defendant was feeling at the time.
It is risky, though, right?
Oh, very risky. And it takes a lot of preparation for a client. And it takes a certain level of intelligence and a client not having an outburst in court and really holding it together.
Right. And obviously, it's not just their lawyer talking to them. That's how it starts. But of course, a cross-examination as well. I want to ask, we'll talk about the preparation after the commercial break. But one last thing about even calling a defendant to the stand. Is there ever cases where a defense attorney would wait to make that call till later in the case? Meaning, all right, the prosecution's presented their arguments, they've rested their case. If you feel like it's going well and you're like, I don't want to mess, you know, that is a potential pitfall, can you adjust mid-trial?
Absolutely. Adjusting mid-trial and even in the defendant's case in chief as to whether or not your client's going to testify or what your client's going to testify about. It's really something that you have to prepare your client for and make sure he or she is understanding that you may have started with the general scope of all these things you want to get out through your client. But as the trial is proceeding, you realize maybe all that doesn't need to come out of your client. And it's best that he or she doesn't testify or at least be more limited in what they testify to.
As someone who spent time as a prosecutor, now a defense attorney, do you have a good read on it? I've talked to lawyers who say that they know what the outcome is going to be, or at least they think they are. But is it really hard? Because all of us right now are kind of analyzing, is it going to be found guilty? Is it going to be found not guilty? I don't want you to speculate on that. But do you think attorneys have a good read when it goes to the jury about what's going to happen?
With jury trials, it's really so much more difficult because it's more of a wild card factor because they're not involved in the system day in and day out. They're not as predictable as a trial in front of a judge, a bench trial. So people do try to guess, attorneys do try to guess, but it's very difficult to say.
As for us watching and we think we know which way the jury is going to go, I'd caution people about that because I imagine it's different sitting in the jury box. And also, we've gotten to see a lot of the conversations that the jury hasn't gotten to see, correct?
Correct. There's so many things that are outside the jury's presence that are excluded that they just don't have any idea of because for evidentiary reasons.
Yeah, and also, I mean, when juries go into that room and deliberate together, I mean, they're having real tough conversations with each other, and jurors can sway and convince other jurors, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And don't forget, these are 12 complete strangers to one another that are thrown into a tiny room. They have to make a decision. So you have different personalities that people are getting to know one another, and then you have to make this huge decision about guilt or innocence.
Yeah. You might have to, like, if I've never gotten into a jury, I probably shouldn't say anything because I don't want to be ever excluded, but I find myself to have a strong personality. I worry a little bit that I'd be trying to bring people over to one side or another, but I guess that's part of the jury system. All right. Before we go to the commercial break, AndersonAA.com is where people can go for more information about you, right, Audrey?
That's correct. Thanks.
All right, and all that you do. All right, so that's the website. The phone number, I'll give that out right now, too, 630-877-5800. That's 630-877-5800. More with Audrey Anderson after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, continuing our conversation with Audrey Anderson from Anderson Attorney and Advisors, attorneys, I should say. Audrey, we were talking about Kyle Rittenhouse trial. I think everyone saw his testimony, or I've seen clips of it, and all anyone could talk about was he crying, was he not crying? Audrey, that's a dangerous game to play, right? Because everyone reacts differently. We don't really know, do we?
No, we really don't. And it could be fake tears, but again, it could be real. He's only 18.
Right.
You know, so this is a traumatic experience for anyone, let alone a teenager.
Now, I would love to say that, hey, jurors, don't look at emotions. Try and just listen to the testimony, the words. That's impossible, though, right? Jurors are going to look at that and talk about that in their deliberations most likely, right?
Oh, definitely. And I've talked to jurors afterwards. I always try to, just to see what works for them or what they thought was important for a guilt or innocence. And they look at everything. They look at how you're sitting, your facial expressions, witnesses in the jury box, other people in the gallery. They look at everything. Eye contact.
Sometimes the things that you wish they wouldn't look at, right? Or not that they wouldn't, because it's up to them, however they want to determine it. But it's like you prepare for all these X, Y, and Z things, and it's like, oh, I didn't believe the way he did that, or I didn't think she was honest in that. That's got to be sort of maddening a little bit.
It is, and that's why it's so important with clients, defendants, that you make sure that how they're answering your questions in direct examination, they answer the prosecutor the same way and not have a battle between the defendant as he's testifying and the prosecutor so that it seems sincere when he's responding to their questions, too.
So what you're saying is when the defense attorney is questioning him, a friendly attorney, I guess you could say, matter-of-factly, you know, whatever the emotion is, do the exact same thing for the prosecutor so it doesn't look like you're dismissive immediately or on the defensive.
Correct. So it doesn't seem as if the defense is so scripted, so prepared, that it seems like you're just as prepared when the prosecutor is cross-examining you and that you are not thinking of your responses, but they flow naturally. So as if you are telling the truth and not trying to make up the truth and lying before the jurors.
When as we pivot here to talking about coaching or practicing or whatever with defendants, a lot of people's ears perk up and say, well, they should just go out there and tell the truth. What do you need coaching for? As if coaching seems like it's this putting on an act. But really, a lot of it is just preparing a defendant for a very stressful situation. Right?
That's so true. And not just defendants. I mean, every attorney prepares every single witness. So, you know, those prosecutors are preparing their police officers, their civilians, just as strong and just as hard as defense attorneys are preparing their defendants.
Do defense attorneys go into the nitty gritty, though, about where to look and what words to use about specific questions, almost rehearsing what prosecutors might ask, too?
Yes, we do the exact same thing that the prosecutors do, how to maintain eye contact, not only with me as your attorney, but the prosecutor, and also to look at the judge and the jury. Because if you're looking at the jurors in the eye, to show them that you are sincere and you're not afraid that they're looking at you as well.
How do you strike that balance, though, of teaching or trying to coach someone, prepare them, I guess is probably the better word to use, prepare them for the situation, but not get them to the point where they seem fake or fabricated or not themselves? That's got to be a fine line.
It's a very fine line and very difficult, and it really depends on your clients and your client's abilities to answer questions and be put under that pressure and microscope.
So when it comes to determining whether to even put someone on a stand, we talked about it beforehand, but you only can give so much advice, because it's really the one of the one things, besides the plea, that the defendant really can direct, right?
Right. It's just the defendant's own decision. Even if his attorney, her attorney decides or says you should absolutely not get on the stand, if your client wants to get up there and testify, she has the absolute right to get up there and testify.
Now, if someone doesn't testify or chooses not to, is that laid out in court? Like, for example, is there a point where the judge asks the defendant directly, do you want to testify or not?
Yes. So at that point, the defense attorney usually will ask the judge to approach and ask for a sidebar outside the presence of the jury, have them excused, and then the judge questions and admonishes the defendant as to him giving up his right to testify and whether or not he's doing it voluntarily, knowingly, and that it's his decision.
Right. And also that I imagine if he chooses not to, the jurors are instructed not to take that in any consideration, right?
Correct. There's a specific jury instruction that it does not have anything to do with his or her guilt, and that they have the absolute right not to testify.
So, as the jurors go into the deliberation room, what do you guys do as you wait? I've always wondered that. I know that it depends, I guess, on how long the deliberations go for. What are those moments like for you? I mean, obviously, for the defendant itself, this is a huge situation. You probably ride that roller coaster too a bit.
You definitely do. The first couple of minutes are a relief that it's done, that it's finally, they're back there. And then you realize, oh my gosh, they're actually back there. They're deciding it. You're done. So everything that you put out, that's what it is, and that's what they have to consider.
Yeah. Oh, that's got to be such gut-wrenching moments. And then just the moments, I mean, even just watching big verdicts in the past where the jurors come in, they pass the note over to the judge. I'm probably looking at the judge's eyes to try and see if it gives you any indication, even though you know the foreman's going to read it or forewoman's going to read it in a moment. That's got to be the most tense moment, I'm sure.
Right. When they come in, you always wonder if they're going to look at a specific attorney or defendant or look down to try to see if that's some sort of indicator of guilt or innocence.
Oh, that's important stuff. All right. I hope you'll come back and chat more about these sorts of things. Anderson Attorneys and Advisors, give me the elevator pitch. Who should be reaching out to you guys?
Well, anyone in the northern suburbs that has a defense case mm-hmm. pending, bigger cases, drug cases, sex offense cases, we're there to help.
AndersonAA.com, the phone number 630-877-5800. It was really great to meet you, Audrey. Thanks for coming in.
It was great. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate it. News coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom and more Let's Get Legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association coming up on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Ernie. 710 on this Saturday evening. I hope you're having a great weekend. I was just thinking back to last Saturday. I think it was 65 degrees outside. I think we're going to have temperatures in the teens, Henry Cass. Are you a winter guy, Henry, or no?
You know what? The fall is my time of year. I love college football. So,
so
you know,
okay.
The viewers can't, or the people
listeners,
listening out there, they can't see my skin tone, but I'm very light-complected red hair. So,
got a big red beard,
too. The sun and I don't get along the greatest. So, you know, I kind of like it when it's a little overcast. But I could do without some of the Chicago winds and stuff.
With the beard, it almost looks, I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones fan, but it almost looks like you came from the north.
It's so funny that you say that. You know, we do a fundraiser every year. It's the DuPage Justinian Society, where we raise money for cancer research. And I actually went as one of the guys in Game of Thrones that's got a big red beard. And
yes.
I can't even remember his name because, in all honesty,
either.
I have never seen an episode. I've always wanted to, but never gotten around to it. But I was him.
You got to watch it now. I know exactly who you're talking about. Can't remember his name, but just generic North character.
Yeah.
Well, Henry, welcome to the show. I'm already making fun of your beard. We're good friends here now. MKFM Law. Tell us about yourself. Tell us about MKFM.
Oh, yeah. So MKFM, great firm. So it's Mirabella, Kincaid, Frederick, and Mirabella. We were established in 1949, so we've been around for over 70 years.
Wow.
We are the largest family law firm that's based out of the Collar Counties. Obviously, there's some larger firms here in Cook County, but when we're looking out to the collar counties, we are the largest family law law firm. We've got a our principal office that's located in Wheaton. In addition to that, we've got a Kane County office that's located in St. Charles, and right now we're looking at getting a Will County office as well so that we can better service those areas. But we cover Will County, Kane, Kendall, Cook, DuPage, trying to think of what other DeKalb.
Right.
So we kind of cover the gambit. And our primary focus is family law, and that's what we've serviced clients for family law. But in addition to that, we also cover a lot of other areas of law. So we cover we service people in criminal law. We do employment law. Matter of fact, I think you had a segment last week or the week before with one of my partners, George Frederick, who does employment law.
And boy, that's a hot issue right now. Boy.
Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. And I think you're actually going to be doing a segment with Stacey McCullough from my office, who does criminal law.
Henry knows my programming better than I do, folks. Yeah. He's on top of it. No, yeah. but it just speaks to the breadth of topics and areas you guys cover.
Yeah, we cover a lot. We also do school law and anything related to family law. So I do adoptions, I do guardianships, we do child support, parentage, you name it. If it's related to family law, we cover it.
Yeah. How did you get into that? Why is that so? Why do you have a passion for that?
You know, it's the funniest thing. I don't know why. I should say that in the past tense. I didn't know why. You know, when I started off, I wanted to do criminal law, and I was a prosecutor. I actually worked under Joe Burkett, who's now an appellate court justice. Great guy. Loved working for him. But I worked for him for years. I was a prosecutor. I did all criminal law, and that's all I really wanted to do. And somehow, I just fell into family law. And one of the things that I really enjoyed about family law was the contact with the clients. But if you had asked me in law school if I was ever going to do family law, the answer would have been unequivocally no.
Yeah.
But it's been my passion, and I've been doing it. I've been practicing for over 20 years now. And the overwhelming majority of the time that I've been practicing has been actually family law.
Well, you know, law is, you know, no matter which field you're in, it's noble, it's important, it's emotional. But family law, I imagine, is as emotional as it gets.
Yeah, it is. It is pretty emotionally charged, and client management can definitely be one of the most challenging things that you do in your job, because a lot of times people want something that you can't necessarily give them. They kind of want this emotional reckoning. They want to be heard.
Yeah.
And especially with COVID right now, it's harder and harder to get into the court. And a lot of times the things that people want to be heard about are not necessarily things that the court is going to take into consideration. And that can be really frustrating for clients.
Yeah. And that's where I think it's like, it must be so rewarding going through a very emotional time with the client to see an outcome. Maybe it's not all that they want, but it's a resolution. It's something that brings, you know, them to that next step of wherever they want to be. That's got to be rewarding.
Yeah, you know, it is for me. Sometimes it is for clients, sometimes not. Yeah. Tell you what, when a client, when we finished up the case, we've done what's called a prove-up hearing where the divorce is finalized and a client, you know, shakes my hand or gives me a pat on the back or says thank you, that's really, it kind of gives you the tingles up the spine. Because, it's just there's a recognition like, okay, I know you were here doing this with me and you went through this battle with me, and now I can open up this next chapter of my life and start moving on.
100%. It's about opening up that next chapter.
Yeah.
MKFMlaw.com is where you can go online. Henry Cass is who we're talking about. Henry, we're going to take a break. I want to get the phone line out there, though. 312-981-7200. Yeah, I'd love to, if you have any questions, and maybe Henry, maybe you can help guide the scope of it if someone's either maybe going through a divorce, or they are considering it, or they're after their divorce especially, and maybe they want to change the situation with the kids, how often someone sees the kids or not. That's a little specific, but really any family law question you can at least give some guidance on.
Absolutely.
You may not know every answer off the top of your head, but you'll certainly find out it. 312-981-7200, that is the phone line. You can also text it in if you'd rather text it in too. That's totally fine. More with Henry Cass after this here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. John Hansen here, 719 on this Saturday evening, chatting with Henry Cass of MKFM Law, talking about family law. And, you know, Henry, I think one of the most, well, you tell me if I'm wrong, but you know, when a divorce is announced or the judge makes the ruling about who can see the kids when, that's not always the end of the story, right?
No,
that
no.
changes,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it changes quite frequently. Matter of fact, that's one of the things that we see change the most often. So when someone goes through a divorce and they get a divorce finalized, a lot of the things are what we call non-modifiable. That's the key language, non-modifiable. So whoever gets the TV, that's it. You're stuck with that TV. Whoever gets the car, you're stuck with the car. But some of the things that always change are going to be things involving like financial support, child support, or the time that you spend with the children. Now, there are also different things that could change, like spousal support in addition to child support, and then also decision-making for the child. But the one we see the most probably is actually parenting time. People used to call it visitation. That's kind of an arcane term. We don't use that term anymore. But parenting time is one of the things that we see after the divorce that changes quite frequently.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, there has to be, and again, this is the magical language. If you speak to your own attorney, you'll probably hear this said, but there has to be what's called a substantial change in circumstances. So if there's this quote-unquote substantial change in circumstances, then that gives rise to a cause of action after the divorce to allow you to either spend more time or, you know, less time with the children, as the case may necessitate. That could also be removing the child from the state into another jurisdiction. But there has to be this substantial change in circumstances.
Hey, you put it in air quotes.
I am. I'm doing the air quotes.
Yes, I'm just letting the listeners know because, of course, that is a nebulous term.
Yeah.
Could that be a change in job, someone getting married to someone else? Like, are those substantial changes?
They could be. Everything's a case-by-case basis, but a lot of times if you speak with an attorney will give you kind of a barometer of, you know, I don't know that this is really going to constitute a substantial change in circumstances. And if we go in, it could be subject to a motion to dismiss. So we want to go in making sure that there really is, in the air quotes, this substantial change. But if there is enough, then we can go back into court and we can try to modify things.
Do you have anything specific that you could give, not necessarily pertaining to a specific case, of course, but just generally speaking, just to give someone an idea in mind that could at least hone in on it a little bit more.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a really ridiculous example, but this is the example that I give with all of my clients because, you know, a lot of times we'll see that people feel that there might be a bias against them and that the law favors the mom instead of the dad in obtaining more time with the child. Let's say, and again, this is kind of a silly example, but let's say that after the divorce is concluded, mom decides to start dating again. Mom starts dating someone who is a registered sex offender, maybe unbeknownst to her. Dad, let's say, was more of kind of the deadbeat dad variety, but he's cleaned up his act. He's gotten a job. He's paying his child support. He's gotten his life together. He really longs to see the children. Okay, dad finds out that maybe mom's, dating someone who is a registered sex offender. This is kind of an obvious example.
Right.
But this would be a perfect example of dad saying, listen, I'm a different person than I was at the time of the divorce, and mom has started to make some questionable decisions and now is placing our child in danger by being with this other individual. Again, do we see this specific scenario happen very often? No. I do have a case where it exists now, but this is kind of the silly example.
But you're painting the picture of what it'd be. Does it have to be a change on both ends, or can it be just a change on one end?
Just on one end is enough.
Okay.
Or it could be on a change on the child's end. It doesn't necessarily have to be mom or dad. It just has to be a substantial change where there's a nexus to the family unit.
Interesting. Boy, I've got a lot of scenarios in my head that I don't even want to go down that road. Because we got callers, 312-981-7200, if you got family law questions. And I always like to preface this because I don't want to put this on you, Henry. You're going to do the best you can. Obviously, every case is specific and different. And, you know, our first caller is going to be from Indiana. So take this all with just the advice that you get or the idea that you get, and it's all general answers. I love to say that for people just ahead of time, just so that they know. And we're going to have Jacqueline calling on now. Jacqueline, how are you doing here this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you all doing there?
We're doing very well. We're happy you called us. What's your question today?
Well, I'll start out with the circumstances.
Don't go into too many specifics, by the way. We don't want to name anyone on air. We'll just say that.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No, we're not naming no name.
All right, cool.
I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my situation.
Okay.
I've been married to a man for 43 years. He decided that he didn't want to be married anymore. He found someone else he's been seeing. I am a Christian woman. Mm-hmm. I totally go by my faith, you know, according to the Word of God.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what happened, but I noticed he started changing. His behavior started changing. I mean, everything just started changing.
Right.
Then he started playing the children against me.
Oh, no.
And our girls are grown. They have their own family. But, of course, they took Dad's side because they do what Dad does.
So, Jacqueline, just to get you to the point here, I'm sorry for these circumstances. Do you have a direct question or a specific question to ask?
Yes. I want to know legally. I'm disabled. I've been disabled since 1990. I get SSI. Mine is only $300 a month. He retired. He retired February, and he gets 911. Now, legally, can I? Do I have any grounds to force him to help me on my bills or any necessities that I need? Or how do I go about that?
Well, it's a great question, Jacqueline. Do you have a general answer for it? I know Indiana law might be different, but...
Yeah. No, so, Jacqueline, thank you so much for calling. Thanks so much for the question. I really appreciate it. I'm going to give you my own little disclaimer and the one that, in addition to the one that John just gave here, but I'm not licensed in Indiana. I was for actually a short period of time. I'm licensed in Illinois and Iowa, and I was shortly licensed in Indiana, but I'm not currently practicing, so I can't give you advice on Indiana law. Here's what I can do. I can tell you what the law would be under Illinois if you were living here, and the answer is unequivocally yes, you're in entitled to, you would be entitled to spousal support. Again, that's here in Illinois, not Indiana. But yes, and spouse support is designed for spouses exactly in your situation. You've been married for a long duration of time, whether you're disabled or not. Even if you weren't disabled, you need help paying those bills. Maybe you've been the primary caretaker of the children. You've been working within the household throughout the course of your marriage. And now you've given up your career so that he could advance his. And so, yes, you're entitled to spousal support.
Okay. Now, do I have to hire an attorney or is there, because my finances, how would I do that?
Yeah. So again, I'm going to qualify that I'll address the situation as though it was occurring in Illinois. The very first thing, do you have to get an attorney? No, you don't have to, but I would strongly suggest that you do. Strongly suggest. My guess is that he'll probably get his own and you're going to be at a significant disadvantage if you don't. And most attorneys, like my firm, offer a complimentary consultation. We offer 1 hour complimentary consultation so people can kind of get their feet wet and start to understand what the law is. So the first thing you want to do is contact an attorney. I'm sure there are plenty out there in Indiana that are going to give you a free consult so you can start to get a better idea of things. And if you're not able to afford an attorney right now, most states are going to allow you a mechanism within the law that permit you to obtain what's called interim attorney's fees. So that is to say that we want both parties to be on a level playing field, and usually one party controls the finances and one doesn't. Well, that's not fair. That's not just. So what we do is we give you access to the funds that are in his possession, but quite frankly, that you own. They're just in his possession.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so just contact an attorney and go from there. Is that...
Absolutely the first step. I wouldn't, you know, my own personal opinion is I wouldn't let your husband know that you're contacting an attorney.
Yeah.
It's not something that you should wave in a spouse's face.
Right.
I typically say that
right.
That's better to keep those things quiet. But yeah, I would start looking around at attorneys and I would interview definitely more than one.
Yeah, check around. Okay, Jacqueline?
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the call.
Good luck, Jacqueline. Okay, we do appreciate that. Oh, boy. And then you can just tell, even just from one call, the personal struggle that people go through, and it's hard.
Well, yeah. I mean, your life is being turned upside down. If you've been in a marriage, especially like Jacqueline's situation, 43 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you're coming up on half of a century there.
Yes.
And so you've spent your life in creating a life with an individual and, you know, children. And it's one of the most stressful events that an individual can go through.
And obviously, we don't know the exact scenario, but you hear that from parents a lot that, you know, the kids are put in these really difficult situations, adults or especially minors. And that's such an odd, you know, a really difficult thing to manage. So I can't even believe it. You got to come back, Henry, because we're running out of time here. But I just want to make sure we hone down on this. Who should be reaching out to not only MKFM Law, but yourself about, you know, whether it's, and why should they be reaching out? Is it about those post-decree situations where someone wants to change how much they're going to be able to see their kids? Give me the elevator pitch, if you will.
Yeah, you know, it just depends. I mean, I'll tell you one of the biggest things. We're seeing this huge shift from what used to be the norm insofar as parenting time is concerned to what it is today. And let me give you a little rundown of what I mean by that. So, you know, when the American colonies were started, we borrowed English common law, and that meant that children were chattel. What does that mean? That means that the children were basically considered property, went with dad. We get to the 1800s, and all of a sudden we've got what's called the Tender Years Doctrine. And that said, you know what? That wasn't the right you know, women really are the caregivers, and it's best that they have the children, especially during a young age. So the pendulum swung from dads all the way over to moms. Now we're seeing the pendulum start to swing back. We've got what's called the best interest standard. With best interest, it's, you know, not are the children property. They're not is, do we just presume that mom, knows best? No. It's what's best for the children. But over the years, since 2018, every year, there's been, legislation introduced, for the presumption that 50-50 parenting time is what is in the best interest of the children. Every year it's failed. In 2021, we had House Bill, I think it was 620. It went down. But my anticipation is that someday that's going to pass, and that's what we get a lot of the calls about. Can I get 50-50 parenting time? Or, hey, since I know that eventually it's going to get there, Can I switch my divorce decree so that now I can try to get 50-50 parenting time?
Right.
But do you have to be inquiring about that to call us?
No.
Absolutely not. No.
Right.
If there's any questions about the children, you might think it's mundane, but, you know, like I said, we offer complimentary consults. Call us. We're happy to field it, and we'll tell you whether we think there's a case there or not.
Yeah, and you can visit the website, mkfmlaw.com. Do you have the phone number on you? You can give it off during the break.
Yeah, 630-665-7300. Again, that's 630-665-7300.
You are a professional. You gave out that number twice, like you've been on the radio a billion times, and I love the history lesson, too. Henry, come back again, please.
Oh, I'd love to. John. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and enjoyed being in studio with you.
Interesting stuff. All right, we got to go for the news here. Plenty more coming up after this here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Always look forward to hearing from Mr. Greenberg. Look forward to that in about 20 minutes or so here on WGN. John Hanson here, host of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. And just a quick little note, our last guest, Henry Cass from MKFM Law, was so great. So was our earlier guest, Audrey Anderson, who handles defense work. She was breaking down the Rittenhouse stuff for us. Turns out those two attorneys know each other. They work together at the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office, and we just happened to have them both here at WGN on the same night. Knew each other pretty well. Pretty cool. Little coincidence there. I imagine the legal world is a small world, like many of us in our professions. We happen to know people from different places in the same line of work. Just cool that they both happen to be here on this Saturday night. All right, we're going to get to the top three legal stories in just a moment. I just want to tee up what we're going to be doing to end the show, though. It's going to be Name That Legal Tune. We've done law-themed songs from shows like the dun-dun, dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. This is not what this is. This is not about shows related to courts. This is about actual songs that have the word law in it or judge in it or have some tied to a famous case or something. We got seven songs for you to play. We're going to play little snippets of them, and you have to be the one to guess either the title or probably more accurately the artist. And we are going to give away a prize, a $50 gift card to the 50-50 restaurant. They have a group. They have so many different locations, 14 establishments all over the city, including Roots Pizza and Westtown Bakery, and those are $50 to 50-50 restaurant group goes a long way. So don't call in yet, but just be ready to, because we're actually going to play one of the clips in just a few minutes. But here are the top three legal stories of the week, and I'm going to start with number three, a developing story. Former Las Vegas Raiders coach John Gruden is suing the NFL and the commissioner specifically, Roger Goodell, with his attorneys contending that emails that led to Gruden's resignation were, quote, selectively leaked to force him out of his job. You will remember that he resigned last month, just about a month ago, October 11th, after emails revealed some derogatory comments he made specifically about the commissioner, about the players' union chief, and also various team owners. The statements were categorized as racist or misogynistic or homophobic. But there's a lot of contention about why the emails were released, and they, at least Gruden's lawyers, say they were selectively released. Now, he resigned himself. He wasn't fired, so I don't know complicating factors of that. His lawyers, John Gruden's lawyers, say, quote, there's no explanation or justification for why his emails were the only ones made public out of 650,000 emails collected by the NFL. Well, the NFL has responded that the allegations are entirely meritless, and the NFL will vigorously defend against these claims. So we'll continue to watch that. Law story of the week number two was a big one yesterday. Steve Bannon, prominent advisor to former President Trump, has been criminally charged for defying a subpoena issued by a congressional committee that's investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. Now, he is not the only person to have been subpoenaed. Some have cooperated, others have not. In fact, other subpoenas were issued last week to a whole host of folks, including Stephen Miller, Kayleigh McEnany, and Mark Meadows, former folks that worked for President Trump. And a lot of them are set to defy the orders, too. Now, that was before Steve Bannon was criminally charged. So he, of course, refused to cooperate with the House. So we have a lot of interesting things happening at once. He's been charged with one count of contempt of Congress for refusing to appear in front of the House and a second one for refusing to produce documents. Now, they're misdemeanors. They're punishable by up to 1 year in jail and a maximum fine of $100,000. So what's going to happen next? Well, Steve Bannon is scheduled to self-surrender on Monday. He's going to make his first court appearance that in the afternoon. So this is like a trial he's going to go through or not. Maybe he'll determine and they'll reach an agreement where he will then testify in front of the House. So this one is not only important for his case, but for these many, many other subpoenas that the House has issued. And law story number one, we got to give it up. We've been talking about it for months, ever since the show started. Britney Spears and her conservatorship. Well, a Los Angeles judge ruled yesterday that the conservatorship has overseen Britney Spears' life and finances for nearly 14 years should be terminated immediately. The judge ruled that Judge Brenda Penny of L.A., it ended an arrangement that Britney had with that had, of course, complained about bitterly. Her fans had railed against her, the Free Britney thing. In June, she told the court that the arrangement, which stripped her of her control in nearly every aspect of her life, had traumatized and exploited her, and had asked for it to end without her having to undergo any mental evaluations. And the judge agreed on Friday. The conservatorship of the person, the judge says, and the estate of Britney Jean Spears is no longer required. And I know a lot of fans were celebrating. This was huge news on Twitter. Britney's been freed, so Free Britney, the hashtag, has come to its completion. I know a lot of people are happy about that. Well, those are the top three law stories of the week, and now we're going to pivot over to the game. So again, 312-981-7200. And even if you don't know the answer to this first one, call in and play anyways. There's going to be six other clues for you, and it's fun. These are a little bit difficult. I don't know, Jack. I thought that these were a little bit difficult. I didn't know every artist off the top of my head as I was looking up some of these. Were these easier to you, or were these a little more difficult for you to answer?
These were definitely hard for me.
All right.
Not a big music guy, so it was hard for me to...
Yeah, but I know there's people out there that will know these. So
definitely.
Can we play the first clip? The first clue. So this is songs about the legal world. Go ahead and play the first clip for us here, Jack, when you get that queued up.
Breaking the law, breaking the law.
All right. That song is called, no surprise, Breaking the Law. Yeah, big shock, Jack.
Big one.
312-981-7200. We're already getting callers on the line. You don't have to necessarily know that one. There's going to be plenty other clues. You can take wild guesses, and the winner is going to get a $50 gift card to 5050 Restaurant. Quick commercial break. Let's get our contestants on the line here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We got a lot of music experts out there. The phone lines were lighting up. For people that want to play, name that law tune, 312-981-7200. We don't need any more contestants now, but just have that number handy for the game we play next week. Our first contestant will be Jamie from Glenview. Jamie, how are you doing here today?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Having a good night?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Stay right there. I'm going to introduce you to the next two contestants. We've got Mary in Mount Prospect. Mary, how are you?
I'm okay, John. How are you doing?
You know, I'm doing very well. Thanks for asking. Not enough people ask me how I'm doing. I appreciate that, Mary. I'm just kidding.
I do care about how you're doing, John.
Thank you, Mary. Do anything fun today?
I went out to the grocery store this morning and I got that done. It was like kind of windy and kind of crappy with like the wind and yes. The leaves and the wet.
Yeah.
And then I just went back inside and did some stuff around the apartment. So it's just taking it easy tonight and listening to the show.
I love that. Hope you've learned something here today. Let's introduce you to Paul from Ohio. Hey, Paul.
Hey, how are we doing today?
Good. You having a good day?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like the sound of that. Well, tell you what. We got Jamie, we got Mary, we got Paul. Let's go ahead and play that first clip again for Name That Law Song.
Breaking the law, breaking the law. Breaking the law, breaking the law.
I almost feel like the lyricist wasn't too challenged while writing that one. It's called Breaking the Law. Jamie, any guesses on who that is?
I would say maybe...
It's okay if you don't know. You can just say pass.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass on that one.
Mary, any guesses?
Okay, this is my guess. Is it Alice Cooper?
No, but I like where you're headed, right? I think that that's... Yeah. You're in the right zone. Paul, do you have a guess?
Yeah, Judas Priest.
Yes, it is Judas Priest. Oh. And that is point number one for Paul. But here now, we got more. Let's get to clip number two.
Hear ye! Hear ye! The court's in session. The court's in session. Now, here come the judge. Here come the judge.
Here come the judge! Here come the judge!
All right, I know that song. I had no idea who sang it, so this is going to be fun. Mary, any guesses who's saying Here Comes the Judge?
I've heard it, but I just can't place it. You're right. I've heard it before, but I just don't know who does it.
Paul, any guesses?
I'm thinking Sammy Davis Jr.
Great guess. Not Sammy Davis Jr. Jamie, any guesses?
Is it Pygmy Markham?
No, it's Shorty Long is the name of that artist, but I didn't know that one either. That's okay. It's a good song. We got to hear a little bit of it. Let's go to clue number three.
Reuben Carter was falsely tried. The crime was murder one. Guess who testified? Bello and Bradley, and they both all they lied. And the newspapers, they all went along for the ride.
Oh, that's a great song. I love that tune. It's Hurricane, of course, the very prominent trial. Paul, any guesses who that was?
Paul.
Bob Dylan, he got it. That's 2 points for Bob Dylan, or for Paul. Jamie and Mary, I bet you guys knew that one, too, but Paul stole it away. That's okay. This one is going to go to Jamie first, but let's get clip number four.
Breaking rocks in a hot sun. I fought the law and the law won. I fought the law and the law won.
Okay, I fought the law, which I believe is then a cover from an earlier one, but this one is pretty well known. Jamie, any guesses of who that was?
I'm going to guess Alice Cooper on that one.
Alice Cooper. No, not Alice Cooper. Mary, any guesses on that one?
The Clash.
Yes, Mary got it. Yes. She gets a point. I love that version. That's great. And Mary's going to have the first guess at this next one, too. Here's clip number five. Living with the Law. Never heard this song till Jack just played it right now. It's called Living with the Law. Mary, any guesses who that is?
Okay, I'm going to say Chris Whitley.
Yes, it is. Chris Whitney, close enough. I'm going to give that to you. How'd you know that?
Wait, who'd you say it was?
Chris Whitney, I believe, is the name. Yeah, so you were close enough.
Oh, my God. See, there's another song that I heard. His voice sounds really familiar, and I knew that that was his voice, but I had never heard that one before.
Look at that, Mary, piecing things together. Nice job. All right, so we got two for Mary, two for Paul. Jamie, I love you. You're at zero right now, but maybe you'll get one here coming up. This next one.
Yeah, maybe. Okay.
This next one is, we're going to give it to Paul first. Let's go ahead and play it.
On this side of the law, on that side of the law. Who is right? Who is wrong? Who is for and who's against the law?
Okay. Paul, I know you know this one.
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, that I think was the easiest one. Jamie, did you know that one too?
I actually knew that one.
I'm going to give Jamie a point too. She's going to get one for that. So Paul's got three. Jamie's got one. Mary's got two. Exactly. All right, let's go with the last and final clue. Jamie, you're going to get first crack at this one.
Oh, woo-hoo.
Sue Me Sure Blues by whom? Jamie, any guesses?
It sounded like a group to me, so I'm going to guess the Beatles, even though I'm probably wrong.
That is not the answer, but I know where you're going with that. That's very close. Mary, any guesses?
Well, you know, Jamie was thinking what I was thinking, and I was thinking it might have been just George Harrison solo.
And you are right about that. It is George Harrison solo.
Wowie.
That brings you to three.
Well, we should give a half a point to Jamie.
Yeah, you know, you're right. Jamie's going to get a half a point. That brings her to 2.5. Mary, you get the full point. You're at 3.
You.
And Paul's at 3. And we are done with the clues, so we have a tie. But the good news is last week we didn't have any opportunity to give away the 50-50 restaurant card. 2 weeks ago, we didn't have a winner on the question of the day. We gave one away earlier for the question of the day. This is a long way of saying I have two winners and I have two prizes to give away. So, Jamie, I'm so sorry. Your 2.5 points doesn't qualify you. You played great. But Mary and Paul, I'm going to give you the 50-50 restaurant card, the gift card.
Awesome.
How about that?
That's so great,
awesome.
John. Thank you.
Yeah, that you guys played so well. Get on hold, and we're going to have Jack get all your information and make sure to send it. Jamie, have a great night. I'm sorry you didn't win tonight, okay?
That's okay. No problem. You too.
I hope you had fun.
So much fun. Thank
you. All right.
You.
Thanks so much. Okay. Tell you what, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll wrap things up, tell you what's coming up next week on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Then we'll have the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And a big thanks to Henry Cass for stopping on in from MKFM Law, mkfmlaw.com, for all your family needs and some other things along the way, too. Big thanks to Audrey Anderson for coming on by as well. AndersonAA.com. She's a defense attorney. Really broke down a lot of interesting aspects of the defense case with the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. Can't forget, big thanks to Naomi Benthor-Fursch. Frisch, who was the oboist we talked to at the beginning of the show, who is also a plaintiff's, an employment law attorney. So basically someone, a worker's rights attorney, who also is an expert oboe player. And a big congratulations to our winners tonight of the 50-50 restaurant gift card, the West Restaurant Group gift card. They got $50 to any of the 14 fantastic establishments all over Chicago, including Roots Pizza and Westtown Bakery. Okay, I've been to Westtown Bakery. I had one right by my place where I lived. It's so good. And Roots Pizza, oh my goodness. I love Roots Pizza. It's incredible stuff. If you want a 50-50 restaurant group card, guess what? I'm going to give you a little clue here. I'm going to give you next week's question of the day ahead of time. Maybe you can do some research and get the answer right at the top of the show next week. Here's the question of the day for next week, which we're on 6 to 8 again next Saturday evening. There are 89 words in what important statement, which is a big part of our U.S. legal history. 89 words in what important statement, which is a big part of our U.S. legal history. We'll get that answer and plenty more next week on Let's Get Legal.